Beloved listeners, and welcome to another hour of Advanced Living Radio. This is Kenneth Lesser, thrilled and delighted to be your host again today. And yes, you know we have a guiding light that helps us to focus on what's going to be of support for better living for all of us. It's a daily prayer that goes like this. Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, show me the best ways to have the most fun inspiring the largest number of people to easily, naturally, joyously experience healthy, wealthy, vibrant, exquisite, passionate living in the shortest amount of time with the least intrusion into their lives so we can all get our needs met and celebrate a global loving community that works for everyone. Yes, that's worth doing. And so every week we focus on bringing new folks to you that are going to help support this to happen. And as we get into the show today, we want to invite you to check out our sponsor, which is AdvancedLivingComfort.com, home of the comfort technology. It's a, as people call it, a Clark Kent clock with superpowers. When you look at it, it looks like a stylish digital clock that you'd see on your desk, nightstand, in your travel bag. But it's been specially modified with a technology that turns it into a support system to get us through the stress of our high-tech electric world with all the Wi-Fi and computers and the power lines and the cell phone broadcasts, all that stuff. So check out AdvancedLivingComfort.com and find out why people like Jack Canfield, Reverend Michael Beckwith, Harvard Medical Doctor Eva Selhub, so many others, are turning to this as a simple and very effective way to lighten their load, get some protection from electro pollution, and just make their lives better quickly. All right. Now, as we move in to the show today, we're talking, of course, about stress is something that's a kind of a nasty thing. Well, we have a wonderful guest with us today, and you know about stress. Who doesn't, right? And we talk about adrenaline. Well, we have a wonderful man, Peter McCarthy, who is going to talk to us about Adrenaline Nation. It's a wake-up call for a stressed-out America. And our friend Peter, he has done some wonderful work. You would think of him as a doctor because he's a naturopath, a political activist, and an author. He is a 20-year military veteran with over 16 years in the airline industry as a Boeing 737 captain, also CEO of AHI Productions, an Austin-based media company, which is creating NHN-TV, the planet's first broadcast quality TV network devoted to natural health and green living. Yeah, so get ready. Strap yourself in, get your notepads out. We are in for a big treat. Welcome, Peter McCarthy.
Thank you, Kenneth. It's a pleasure to be on the show today.
Oh, we're just delighted you can take time to be with us. And, of course, this book got a catchy title there, Adrenaline Nation. Can you tell us what prompted you to bring this forward to us?
Well, you know, Kenneth, it was really a combination of my professional and personal life experiences. I first started getting the idea for the book while I was flying in the airline business, and I saw so many of my fellow crew members who were suffering from what I ultimately learned were stress-related illnesses, autoimmune disorders such as fibromyalgia, lupus, chronic fatigue. In fact, the female flight attendant population is a segment of our population in the United States that has one of the highest incidences of autoimmune disorders in the country. Prior to that, of course, as you mentioned, I spent 20 years in the military, and over half of that was spent flying B-52 bombers, primarily during the Cold War. And 1 week out of every three, when I was serving as a crew member and then later as a commander, either I or the crew members that I commanded were on nuclear alert, ready at a moment's notice to deliver a retaliatory response to a surprise attack. And as you might well expect, that had its own set of stressors for both the crew members and their families. The mission of a B-52 bomber was very demanding, lots of training involved, and an accompanying level of stress. But really my interest in stress started back with my own family, where in the 80s and 90s I saw all of my parents' generation perish from diet and lifestyle-related illnesses whose root cause was stress. So that combined really motivated me to seek out first a career as a traditional naturopath, but secondly to do the research about stress and stress management and ultimately to write Adrenaline Nation.
Wow. Wow. That is awesome. Now, I know this is going to sounds simple because folks, you know, you say a word and you think everyone knows what it means, and the word stress, it would be kind of like that. But I'd like you to add your own special research and understanding when we say, well, Peter, what is stress?
Well, and that's a very good question, and you're absolutely right, Kenneth, that virtually everybody has their own definition of stress, and as I did the research for the book, that became very clear. Healthcare and the healthcare industry has a certain definition of stress. The business community has another, and individuals across our country each have their individual definition of stress, and it stands to reason because we are all biochemically unique, and therefore we all have a unique ability to deal with stress. And so for everybody that looks at the word stress and the concept of stress, it's a lot like looking at the corner of a huge painting, and you're trying to figure out what the painting is about by just looking at the corner. Well, I brought all of those, or many of those concepts together in the first chapter of Adrenaline Nation, and the definition that I arrived at is that stress is any stimulus that activates the body's fight-flight response mechanism, and it's also the results of that activation. So when you look at stress, it's really a two-dimensional phenomenon. It's the stimulus and the results. And that is supported throughout the healthcare community as a similar definition as well.
Wow. Okay. And can you expand a little bit more? Because you've shared some of that. Are there any additional of the components of stress as we kind of help redefine it and see if we can get on the same page with you here?
Sure. Well, first of all, everybody needs to understand what the fight-flight response is. It's that ancient primordial response mechanism that all of our bodies have when we are confronted with a life-threatening situation. And originally, when humans first appeared on the planet, that was its original purpose, was to allow our ancient ancestors to either fight or flee from a threat. For example, fleeing or fighting a saber-toothed cat. That's the original genesis of the stress response. But as we have moved into 21st century America, we activate our stress response for other than life-threatening situations, or we have it activated for us by influences that are placed upon us. And what you're referring to, I believe, Kenneth, is what's in the first chapter of my book, and it's called the stress stack. And it's a qualitative model that allows people to identify those stressors in their daily lives that they may not have been otherwise aware of, and to allow them to gauge the magnitude of those kinds of stressors.
Ah, okay. Now, I love that term. Stress in itself is bad enough, and then we now have a term that I really hadn't heard before that I love, stress stack. Can you talk about some of the major characteristics of the things that contribute into that?
Absolutely. There are six blocks to the stress stack. The first is dietary influences. These are the foods and beverages that we consume sometimes on a daily basis that actually activate our body's stress response. And they are some of what I like to call the usual suspects. Caffeine, foods and beverages, processed sugar, white flour, artificial sweeteners, and trans fats. All are dietary influences and in that first block of the stress stack. The second are lifestyle influences. And these are things like the amount of sleep that we get, how much traffic we have to drive in every day, the office environment that we have to live and work in. And you at the beginning of the program talked about one of your sponsors' products that helps alleviate a stressor in that arena, which are Wi-Fi networks, electronic equipment emanations, etc. Then there's the cognitive filter. The cognitive filter is really the prism through which we view the world, and that what therefore determines our reaction to stress. And these are the combination, or it's comprised of a combination of the physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual influences on our mind and on our perception of our world around us. Then there's the nutritional gap. The nutritional gap is really the difference between what we eat on a daily basis and what our body actually needs to support a healthy stress response.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Toxic influences, chemical, biological, radiological influences, and some of us are exposed to those to greater or lesser degrees, but we all have some exposure to some of that most of the time. And then there's the trigger factor, the final block of the stress stack, and that can be that significant life event such as the loss of a job, the death of a spouse or a child or other family member, an automobile accident, that because we've been carrying such a high stress load comprised of those other five blocks, tips us over into overt illness. And that's a brief description of the stress stack.
Ah, wow. Well, you've certainly brought up some important things: the diet, lifestyle, cognitive filters, nutrition gap, toxic influences, and the trigger factor. And for most of us, gosh, it's sort of like, I've got to know more. And, of course, this is where you go into detail in your book, I'm taking it, about these things, right?
Absolutely. I offer everybody an in-depth description of each block of that stress stack, and so that you'll know not only what they're comprised of, but why I've included those influences or those factors in each of those blocks. Because it's important for people to be empowered and educated and informed about all of the components of our society that contribute to our chronic stress pandemic. If you don't know that they're there, or you don't know that they are a potential stressor to you, how can you take positive action to alleviate that stress? So a big part of Adrenaline Nation is self-empowerment for the reader to educate him or her on all of this important information, but equally important for them to be able to take substantive action to alleviate those stressors.
Okay, well, that makes a lot of sense. Now, for people that want to be checking out a website while listening to this, can you help refer us to somewhere we can learn more about this on the Internet?
Absolutely. I've got a website of my own, petermccarthy.com. Has a series of videos that are collectively titled Stress-Free Summer. It'll give you lots of good information and some helpful hints on how to alleviate your stress. It's also a blog, so you can leave a comment there once you've seen the videos and read some of the other posts. Also, if you want to download a free stress assessment, you can do that by going to adrenaline-nation.com. That's adrenaline-nation.com. And those two resources are available to get you started to learn a little bit more about what I'm about as far as my mission of stress management and stress alleviation, and also to learn a little bit more about Adrenaline Nation.
I think that's just great. People know, for instance, if they're taking up a sport, football, basketball, whatever, soccer, that there's complexities to all that, and they've got to learn all kinds of different things, the playing field, the rules, the equipment, all of this stuff. And now what is exciting to me about your work is in this world of stress, people have come to sometimes be, I don't know, almost numb to it. Oh, yeah, everyone's got stress, so what? And then that's their way of dismissing it. And what's so great is I feel like we're now going to step into a playing field with you where we start to become aware of what's going on in specific areas, so it's not just this general big term, but a whole bunch of factors that we can take a look at and then do something about. Is that any of your, I tongue-in-cheek call it a secret evil plan?
Well, it's certainly not intended to be evil, Kenneth, but that is part of the plan. You know, what you were describing just now is something that Deepak Chopra, MD, has a very apt term to label it, and it's called the hypnosis of social conditioning. And part of that hypnosis of social conditioning has been that we've tended to look at stress as purely a psychological phenomenon, something that we know what it is, and we can easily and quickly deal with it. And, of course, in the conventional medical system, that means that, typically speaking, you're either talking about taking a prescription drug or some sort of psychological therapy.
Just wanted to take a quick moment of additional information. Some of you may have heard a periodic little beep now and then, and that is not anything to be concerned about, just a little technical glitch, and we're going to carry on because obviously a little periodic beep is put to serve as a reminder to you, pay attention to what Peter M. McCarthy has to say today. This is exquisite information from someone with a diverse and just passionate background of helping people to live better. So as we were mentioning, there's some places that you can check things out, and we're sharing a little bit about how Deepak Chopra had talked about this social conditioning distress, Peter. And go ahead from there, would you?
Sure, absolutely. As I mentioned, Deepak calls it the hypnosis of social conditioning, that we become so used to certain factors in our society that we consider them to be normal. And therefore, we just dismiss our ability to be able to do something about their effect on us because they're there all the time. There's nothing we can do about it, so we just have to grin and bear it. But part of my mission in writing Adrenaline Nation has been that I want people to be aware that for some of these so-called normal activities, there is a cost associated with uncritically allowing ourselves to be exposed to them without trying to take positive action to alleviate them. And that cost is adding one more increment to a block in the stress stack that keeps growing and growing and growing. And the reason that it does that is that most people in our society don't take positive action to alleviate their stress. They believe that, for example, a 1 or 2 week vacation a year is going to be enough to just allow them to de-stress. Well, all it really does is create that vacation illusion that will simply delay the day of reckoning for the costs that are being imposed on their bodies from the impact of chronic stress. So it's very important for people to recognize what these stressors are and then take positive action to either alleviate or eliminate them.
Ah, this is great. Now, for myself, and I think a number of us, as you've brought to mind the stress stack, I am wondering, just for sake of better learning, could we go over those different items, and there's six of them, and then share, like, whether it's dietary or lifestyle, give some more things. It may be a little repeat of things you mentioned previously, but can you add a little bit more to that group so that we can really begin to become aware of the factors? And because these are all things that we can do something about, right?
Absolutely. Well, let's take them one at a time. The dietary influences first. I mentioned caffeine. It's consumed by 200 million Americans or more every day. And people think that because they see media reports on the antioxidant content of coffee or the fact that it gives you more energy, that it's somehow a good thing. Well, it certainly does do those things, but there are costs associated with consuming caffeine. It has a negative impact on your digestive system. It directly stimulates your adrenal glands, which are your body's primary managers of your stress response. And over time, it can have a detrimental impact on your brain chemistry as well. Then there's the processed sugar and white flour. And I lump those two together primarily because their action in the body is very much similar. Your blood sugar shoots up dramatically when you consume foods that have these substances in them. And the glucose is very rapidly metabolized because, in part, the adrenal glands secrete cortisol to help the blood sugar get processed. But then just as quickly, that blood sugar will drop. And you probably either yourself or know people who have experienced the sugar high followed by the sugar crash. Over time, mm-hmm. that can incrementally exhaust the adrenal glands. Artificial sweeteners have the effect of being able to stimulate the body to take whatever food you consume and shunt it into the fat cells. So is it any wonder why, at the same time that we have such a pervasive influence of so-called diet foods and beverages in our society, we simultaneously have a problem with obesity?
Yeah, and, huge.
And then there's trans fats. Trans fats compete with the raw material that the body needs to create stress hormones. And unfortunately, if you consume a trans fat, it will beat out the raw material that you really need, the omega-3 essential fatty acids, at the cellular level every time. So you can see all of those influences or all of those dietary factors help to create stress in the body or compromise the ability of the body to be able to effectively mount a stress response.
Now, if someone is looking for how to identify trans fats, it may or may not be on a nutrition label on a food product. Is there another way they can look for something as an ingredient to alert them to stay away from this stuff, which would essentially have trans fats in it?
Well, actually, now I believe they're required to label whether or not they have trans fats in them.
Oh, okay. Good.
Yes. So, I mean, in that regard, our society has stepped ahead as far as that goes. And typically speaking, you can see whether they have zero trans fats or a certain amount of trans fats, that kind of thing. So from, you know, that standpoint, it's good because you do want to discriminate and avoid those foods that contain trans fats.
Great. Okay. Fantastic. And let's see, how about lifestyle influences?
Well, lifestyle influences, that's a huge category, of course. Let's just take a couple of things and talk about them. And I outline a large number of lifestyle influences in Chapter 3 of Adrenaline Nation, and it's called A Day at the Office, and it follows a typical corporate employee from the time they get up in the morning until they go to bed at night. So you can see the myriad of stressors that impact their daily lives. But lifestyle influences, some of the biggies that you might be thinking of. You mentioned exposure to electromagnetic radiation. That's a lifestyle influence. I include it there simply because it is so pervasive in our society. There's not a place that you can go anymore where you don't have access to a Wi-Fi network. And, you know, how many people, myself included, are using smartphones in this country? Well, that's all well and good, and they certainly provide us wonderful convenience, but the cost to us, to our bodies, is that we're exposed to that radiation. And especially in the case of cell phones, a simple 15-minute conversation with a cell phone held up to your ear can create dangerous temperature changes deep inside your brain, which, if the exposure is chronic over an extended period of time, can ultimately cause serious illness like breast or brain cancer. At the same time, you've got what is probably the most pervasive issue in American society, and that's sleep deprivation. Mm. We've heard for decades, get 7 or 8 hours of sleep a night. Yet people have convinced themselves, another example of social conditioning, that if they drink caffeinated beverages, eat white flour or processed sugar foods for quote-unquote energy, they can get by with 4 or 5 hours of sleep. Oh. And that's made even more of a problem by the fact that so many people stay up late at night, not just watching TV anymore, but playing video games, being on the Internet, on the computer. And all of that can create a pattern of fatigue, which can ultimately morph into something like chronic fatigue syndrome because of the lifestyle habits that they develop over time. So those are just a couple of examples of many that I talk about in Adrenaline Nation. And the way I address the particular issues that I've mentioned today is, first of all, don't skimp on your sleep. The best thing you should do to be able to get a good night's sleep is, at or prior to 10 o'clock at night, turn off the computer, turn off the television, turn off the video games, let your body and mind rest so that you can now get a good night's rest. As far as the cell phones are concerned, I suggest that you either use them on speakerphone, or if you're not in a quiet enough environment to be able to do that, use a wired set of headphones or earpieces, rather, and a microphone so that you can keep that cell phone far enough away from your body to avoid having that chronic radiation exposure.
Mm. Okay. Good. Yeah. Just every little thing that we do adds up. And I'm just wondering, I'm thinking out loud. I don't know, because I haven't had a chance to go through every part of your book yet, just a cursory review. And it would be great. I'm just thinking of something that would be almost like, I don't know if you call it winning the stress game or some name, but it's like people keeping track, and each time they do something that is going to be positive and supporting, they make a note, they can put it on a computer, put a sheet, I don't know, just some way to give ourselves some strokes for positive steps. And you may already have that in the book, but it just seemed like as we take time to become conscious of this, it'd be nice to get some sort of a positive reward, but I don't know if that makes any sense or not.
Well, you know, the positive reward I think that people get is that they wind up feeling less stressed, first of all, and more
That's
relaxed.
That's a good one.
And also that because they now have the tool of the stress stack, they can look at that at in kind of a before and after framework and say, well, you know, I used to drink 3 cups of coffee today, now or a day. Now I'm down to 1 or maybe none. I used to stay up until 2 o'clock in the morning playing video games, knowing that I had to get up at 6:30 to go to work. Now I don't do that, and I feel more rested. And those are just a couple of examples of how you can use the material in the book to really gauge qualitatively how you're doing as far as alleviating your own stress. Because stress is such a broad area, and it encompasses so many different factors that it's really hard to take a formulaic approach toward it because everybody's stress load is different. And because of that, something that, let's say, an agricultural worker might be exposed to daily doses of chemical fertilizers and pesticides because they're working out in the fields, that's not something a corporate office worker would be exposed to, or vice versa. The corporate office worker may be exposed to, you know, 2 or 3 cups of coffee during the day, constant exposure to a Wi-Fi network, holding a cell phone up to his ear frequently. That's something that agricultural worker may not be exposed to on a daily basis. So the stress stack is really designed to allow people to enumerate for themselves what stress factors there are in their lives and then take substantive action to either alleviate or eliminate them.
Okay, great. Thank you. Now, let's see, I think on the list, are we ready to dive in a little bit more into this cognitive filter?
Absolutely. Cognitive filter, as I mentioned, is the prism through which you view the world, and it really determines how you mentally and emotionally react to stress. And there are mental, emotional, physical, and spiritual components to that. And when you think about that, that stands to reason. Take the mental framework. You know, if you have grown up in a certain family environment where certain values or certain behaviors were taught to you, that's going to help determine how or what your mental outlook is and how, therefore, you react to stressful situations. In the physical arena, if you have, let's say, certain limitations in terms of your movement or how your body is made. An example that I use in the book of that applies to me personally is I have a tendency to let my left foot toe out somewhat, and it's how I stand, and it's a result of how I was built and born, and it's just something that I have to accommodate when I'm walking around and just moving through life. The emotional aspect of stress, of course, can be huge for people. And typically speaking, when someone is under a chronic stress situation, the emotional aspect of it manifests first. It can be either in what they call reduced emotional margin, which means that you react negatively in situations that people might otherwise not if they're not under stress, or it can manifest in things like depression, insomnia, anxiety, and a number of other psychosomatic disorders. And then you get to the spiritual aspect of the cognitive filter, and the spiritual aspect is something that many people in this country tend to dismiss because they equate spirituality with religion. And as I mentioned in Adrenaline Nation, we're not talking about religion here per se, but your connectivity to something larger than yourself and your ability to interact with that in a way that is positive. And a spiritual practice that somebody could indulge in that may not have anything to do with religion would be, for example, meditation. And there's lots of good research to support the benefits of meditation. Or simply just walking in nature. How many people enjoy walking in the park, for example, or down a forest trail in nature? Those are the components of the cognitive filter that really help determine how we interact with the world around us and therefore how we react to stress.
Wow. I know. That to me, that's so important because I've lived all my life in a city, and it was only recently that past, I'd say, year, that I took time, because it wasn't getting out in nature, so to speak, but there's a little grass, and I would take time and take off my shoes and socks and stand for 5, 10, 15 minutes, feet touching the earth, touching the grass, and wow, who'd have thought that could be so good?
Well, you know, what you were doing, Kenneth, is actually something that is now called earthing. And there's a very good book of the same title that's written by one of my colleagues in the healthcare industry and his co-authors. And it does show that about 30 minutes a day of doing something like that, or if you're indoors, if your feet are in contact with a surface that itself is directly in contact with the ground, that helps normalize your body's electromagnetic field, and that is crucially important, as I know your sponsors know, to being able to live healthfully in 21st century America, because we are essentially electromagnetic beings, and we have a measurable electromagnetic field associated with our body, and if that field becomes distorted by chronic exposure to some of the things we've talked about earlier, or more prevalently in big cities, when you spend a lot of time in steel-framed office buildings, that can help set the stage later on for chronic illness. So earthing, like you just described, and you did a great job of describing it, is a really good thing to do on a regular basis, literally every day.
Ah, okay. Wow, this is great. Now, the nutritional gap is an area that, can you share a bit more about that?
Sure. When you look at the survey data that has to do with the eating habits of the American people, a maximum of 20% of the population say that they eat a balanced diet. And we've all heard the adage of eat a balanced diet and you don't need to take vitamins, and all of the literature supporting the importance of a balanced diet. Well, unfortunately, for a variety of factors, the changes in the nature of our food supply to more processed food, the fact that the nutritional status of our produce has decreased over the last 50 years or so, and just the eating habits of the American people, virtually no one in this country eats a balanced diet. And I should also mention that that survey data was gathered by consumer self-reporting. It was somebody saying, oh yeah, I eat a balanced diet. Well, chances are most of those people really don't. They just think they do. And the unfortunate part about that is that on a daily basis, if there's a gap, and there usually is, between what you need to eat in order to support a healthful stress response and what you actually do eat, then over time that nutritional gap is going to add to your stress load because it's going to compromise your body's ability to actually mount a healthy stress response. Mm. And so I recommend a number of key nutrients that as a minimum need to be included in the diet. Obviously, there are more that need to support other facets of good health. But for supporting a healthy stress response, you need therapeutic doses of vitamin C, vitamin B, the omega-3 essential fatty acids, preferably in the form of fish oil, because that's proven to be the most healthful omega-3 in that respect. And then finally, a good suit of trace minerals that include doses for minerals such as magnesium and calcium, which will allow your body to now better support those stressful situations when you encounter them.
Wow. Okay. This is excellent. The next factor that we're looking at, toxic influences as part of the stress stack?
Absolutely. And the reason that's in there, and I label them chemical, biological, and radiological, the chemical aspect, I think, is probably the most pervasive in our society and has the biggest impact. I mean, we're certainly exposed to biological influences, and probably the one that most people are familiar with is so-called flu season. Mm. And during certain times of the year, we're more prone to be exposed to those kinds of influence. The radiological aspect of things would have to do with, for example, when you fly across the country, and this taps into my experience as an airline pilot. A typical cross-country flight exposes you to cosmic radiation equivalent in dose to that of a chest X-ray. Well, if you're a frequent flyer or an airline crew member, guess what? You're going to be exposed to that dozens, if not hundreds, of times a year. And that can build up over time to create stress in the body. But let's get back to chemicals, because, as I said, that's the biggest piece of this particular pie.
Sure.
The Environmental Protection Agency has identified over 500,000 chemicals in our mm-hmm. society that require special handling, and that number increases on the order of about 5,000 a year. Well, we hope that all of those chemicals are handled properly. But many of those chemicals are also included in small doses in some of the products that we use in our households every day. Household cleaners, even some of the cosmetics that we use, have these synthetic chemicals in them as either preservatives or enhancers of the product's function. But combined in those small doses over time, they add to the stress stack because they expose us chronically and incrementally, but significantly over time, to that form of stress.
Wow. Wow. We've got our work cut out for us, Peter. I'm
yes,
so glad you're on the scene helping us to recognize these things and take some positive action.
Well, thank you for that. I do appreciate it. And again, that's part of my mission with Adrenaline Nation and some of the other activities that I'm involved with. So thank you for that. It's nice to get positive feedback, always. It helps to de-stress.
Yeah. There's a good thing. Now, the trigger factor is...
Right. Let's talk about that a little bit, because that's something that, you know, some people might look at and say, well, that's really not a stressor, but it is. Think of it this way. How many people do you know that you can describe like this? They've been in good health, apparently, for many years, yet some significant life event, like the loss of a job, the loss of a family member, or maybe an injury-causing accident, starts them on a long slide, sometimes slow, sometimes fast, where they never recover their health again. The problem in our society with that situation is that most people think linearly about it. They look at that one event and say, well, that was the cause of it. But there's no recognition of the fact that most of these people, if they find themselves in that situation, actually have been carrying a significant stress load comprised of the other five blocks of the stress stack for an extended period of time. And their body has literally been teetering on the brink, so to speak, of ill health. And all it took was that one trigger to push them over the edge. So you can count that trigger factor as that sixth and final block of the stress stack.
Okay. Yeah, boy. And there's so many factors like that. Now, as you're mentioning that, I'm wondering, because you talk in your book about something that's called the catabolic threshold, and I wonder, do those tie in at all with the triggers and this catabolic threshold. Can you explain
The catabolic threshold is actually that brink, that point beyond which you now descend into ill health. And I called it that because, typically speaking, the word catabolic means destructive, that there are destructive changes going on in the body. Prior to reaching the catabolic threshold with your stress stack, your body is still in a form of health maintenance, although it's really more a form of health adaptation because you're adapting to all of these different stressors. But once you cross that catabolic threshold and your body is no longer able to adapt to all of the stressors placed upon it, now you're into the regime of health restoration. You're going to have to take some positive and perhaps in some cases some extreme measures in order to regain your health and move back into health maintenance. So that's why I call it the catabolic threshold.
Okay. Okay. Well, that's important. And then there's a whole chapter of your book that talks about the connection among stress, ill health, and the healthcare crisis that we're facing. Can you help connect the dots for us?
Sure, absolutely. And, of course, I do that in a lot more detail in Chapter 2. But to summarize it very briefly, when you look at the leading causes of death in this country, and I use that as the most valid and useful statistic for describing our state of health in America, in fact, about 8 of 10 of them can be classified as diet and lifestyle related. Well, we've just had an extended discussion about how diet and lifestyle factors contribute to stress. And what's now begun to happen is that the healthcare community is waking up to the fact that most of these illnesses are ultimately caused by stress. And what are we talking about? We're talking about the big illnesses, heart disease, cancer, neurovascular diseases like Alzheimer's and dementia, diabetes, which is now the fastest growing illness in the United States. All of those can be traced back to stress as their root cause. But then you look at the next step. How do we treat these? Well, generally speaking, we treat them with the standard medical procedures that are offered by the conventional medical system. And every year, the costs for treating those illnesses grow ever larger. In fact, one of the primary reasons why President Obama wanted to have the Affordable Care Act passed was because the cost had just grown so great. But think about that for a minute. All we're talking about with the Affordable Care Act is who's going to pay for it? Have we done anything substantive to be able to change how we intercept the causes of those illnesses, which, as I've mentioned, can collectively be attributed to chronic stress? Back at the root? No, we haven't. We haven't connected the dots. We've treated cancer as, oh my goodness, this is so terrible that this person contracted cancer in some form.
Yeah.
What are the causes of that? That's what I do in Adrenaline Nation, is I connect those dots for people so they can see very clearly not only what the root causes are, but also why our healthcare system is so minimally able to address the problem of chronic stress in America.
Wow, that is huge. And again, would you remind folks the two websites, and please include the spelling of your name so people can get that?
Sure, I'll be happy to do that, Kenneth. My website is petermmccarthy.com. That's PETERMMCCARTHY.com. And then you can download a free stress assessment by joining our online community at adrenaline-nation.com. That's adrenaline-nation.com.
Okay, great. That's going to help us. Now, I'm just wondering, we've covered quite a bit of area here. Now, is there anything that that you might bring up in terms of stressors that people may not know about, or have we kind of gotten into much of that?
Well, we've gotten into quite a few of that. I don't want to give the whole book away, of course.
All right.
But let me just share one example that I think is instructive to people.
Yeah.
Driving in rush hour traffic, and that's something that many people who live in or near large cities have to contend with every day. When you look at the typical 40-year working lifetime of a corporate employee, it turns out that over that period, they are exposed to over 20,000 rush hour traffic events in their lifetime. And how many of them do you think involve some sort of stress, either because there's a traffic slowdown due to congestion, there's an accident that stops traffic altogether, or, as is frequently the case, somebody's driving in rush hour traffic and someone stops short in front of you. You either have a fender bender or, boy, you have to slam on the brakes, and in either case, it becomes a stressful event. Those are the kinds of things which cumulatively over time, if you don't take positive action to alleviate the stressors, they will catch up with you. And the statistics in our healthcare system are very clear about that.
Okay. Ooh, well, this is helpful. And let's see, as I'm thinking, there's something that I don't know if you could call it the three phases or major phases or parts of chronic stress, because so many of us have just been stressed out for a long time.
Oh, okay. I think I know what you're referring to, and those are the three phases of the stress response that Dr. Hans Selye, who was the stress research pioneer, started this whole discussion back in the mid-1930s, refers to, and he calls the stress response, or he structures the stress response in three phases. The first one is the alarm phase, and that's what you experience, like, for example, in the traffic jam where we stop short behind somebody in front of us.
Yeah.
The adrenaline just rushes up, and we our heart rate increases, and, you know, our blood pressure goes up. We tense up on the wheel. That's the alarm phase. But if the stress is not alleviated, it goes into the resistance phase. And that's where you start to see very slow but subtle changes in your body's operation. Blood pressure can start to rise. You can start to experience insomnia. There are a number of manifestations, because the body actually kicks off over 1,400 different changes when you go into a stress response. Mm. Well, if you stay in that long enough, what happens is the body tries to adapt. And in fact, for example, the adrenal glands, which sit on top of the kidneys and typically are about the size of your thumb, can grow to three times their normal size in an attempt by the body to adapt to this increased stress load. Well, think about what that means. Look at your thumb and think about what it would look like if it was three times its normal size.
Wow.
But the body, just like a sprinter who may normally run a 100-yard dash but now is being asked to run a mile, is eventually going to run out of gas. It's going to deplete its energy reserves, and that's when we descend into the exhaustion phase. And we start experiencing symptoms like not being able to stay asleep at night. You know, how many people have you talked to in your own experience, Kenneth, that say, you know, I just can't get a good night's sleep because I keep waking up? That's
right.
That is a absolute indicator.
Wow.
That they are in the exhaustion phase. And that's when you reach that point, and hopefully you don't, because you can take the advice in Adrenaline Nation and avoid that, but if you reach that point, that's when you really need to get the help of a trained, preferably holistic healthcare professional who knows how to do some of those out-of-the-box things that aren't involved with conventional medicine and are able to help your body recover.
This is great. Peter, we've just, to me, scratched the surface, and we've gone through our hour together, and I just am so honored and want to have people check out PeterMcCarthy.com and Adrenaline-Nation.com.
That's correct.
Okay, and Peter, thank you for taking time to be with us today. I wish you much success, and to my beloved listeners, thank you for tuning in, and to all of us, God bless, and goodbye for now.
All right, thank you very much, Kenneth. Great to be on the show.
Thank you. Bye.